Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
There's no reason to touch
it. And inform you in the afternoon.
I think your cheeks are a little loose.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
He feels that he's great at second. I don't know. I never saw it. If you ask him, I'm great. You know, if you ask Pedroia, then he'll say he sucked. There's a lot that goes into it. Teams do it differently. I saw Muncy playing second base yesterday. That's the way they do it. We got some pretty good second basemen. We got some good outfielders. And like I said, this is we're in the World Series. That conversation was going to come up. One thing for sure, you know, JD will play. That's clear. So we'll see which alignment is better, which lineup is better, and we'll make decisions accordingly.
Alex Cora yesterday on Mookie Betts moving to second base when the Red Sox play at the Dodgers and there's no designated hitter. You got to pull someone off the field. So what do you do? What do you do? Because J.D. Martinez is going to play. He'll play the outfield. I am stunned. I am stunned that Mookie Betts at second base has gotten traction. When it was brought up last week by callers, we laughed at him. Like, you know, what are we doing? The guy's played there once in 4 years, and that once was an emergency fill-in sort of just, you know, one-off kind of deal. It was at the end of this year, right? Garbage time of this year?
Yeah, it was this season.
Once in 4 years.
And roughly around somewhere in the middle of the year, I think. But anyway, go ahead.
Meanwhile, he's the best right fielder in baseball and is an absolute difference maker defensively out there. So you're going to take him out of right field, put him at second base, and get weaker in two positions. All because why? You people need to have Jackie Bradley in the lineup? That's what this all goes back to. The Jackie Bradley Jr. hippies. Like, you know, that's what it is. They can't fathom Jackie Bradley being benched. Jackie Bradley and his 200 batting average being on the bench for three games in L.A. They can't fathom it. So because of that, we've now got to play Betts at second or J.D. Martinez at first or Benintendi in center and blah, 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 as opposed to just benching the kid who hits 200, Jackie Bradley. So that's what this is all born out of. But Betts took grounders at second the other day during a workout. Shaughnessy, I talked to him on TV last night. Shaughnessy says the solution to this is simple. Play Mookie Betts at second. I'm like, what? Danny? What? So I guess this is a serious thought, or is it? What do you think?
I wouldn't do it. I mean, when this came up last week, I said, no, I'm surprised the Red Sox are even considering it.
Do you think they are?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm starting to wonder whether there's an internal disagreement there. That's what I'm starting to wonder about. When you listen to Cora talk about it, well, you know, he says he's great at it. You know, I haven't seen it. You know, like, I think that's Cora's way of saying there are people in our organization that want to do it because we're a better offensive team and I don't want to do it because then I'm going to make us weaker defensively at two positions. So, honestly, I'd be surprised if ultimately they go through with it. I'd be surprised because you're going to play at second base? Like, you're talking about the ability to turn double plays here.
So,
second base.
So, look. I don't want to do this, what I'm about to say, but it just occurred to me when I was arguing with Shaughnessy last night on TV. It's like, well, if you're going to do this, why not play Betts at first base? First base is easier than second, right? If you're going to hide him somewhere or stash him somewhere or just shoehorn him somewhere because you're so intent on keeping Jackie Bradley and his 200 batting average in the lineup, then play Betts at first. And they looked at me like I had four heads. Is first harder than second?
No, see, this is the thing. It's just because he played there in the minor leagues. And no, first is not harder than second. It's not.
I mean,
second is harder than first.
I wouldn't do either. The overthinking here is
neither.
Your center fielder hits 200. Your center fielder hits two. He hit 200 in the ALCS. So that's what I keep saying. That's why I keep saying 200. He won the ALCS MVP batting 200. He had three hits in the series. Three.
Yeah, but you yourself were talking about how big those three hits were.
Huge.
Were such a difference maker in that ALCS.
Okay, but
so
what
you can't bench that guy right now.
But wait a minute. But the analytics crew and the nerds would tell me that doesn't matter.
Well, the nerds should also tell you, though, defensively, that Bradley should be able to cover up a lot of ground there.
So that
I
get.
In the outfield.
Yes, the nerds would tell me. But the nerds would also tell me that the hits and when they came are irrelevant. Clutch doesn't exist to a nerd. The nerd looks at nothing other than
the numbers and
contact, exit velocity, you know, not even whether it's an out or a single for a lot of these guys, FIP and these things like this. It's all about do you barrel the ball and what happens after they don't care about. When it came, was it clutch? Was it, you know, so the nerd says, no, he had three hits. Or he barreled the ball X amount of times. He hit 200 in the ALCS. I mean, to me, it's simple. You sit Jackie Bradley, you move Betts or Benintendi to center, and that's it, and you live with it. And then Bradley's a nice guy off the bench, late-inning defensive replacement, or a left-handed bat, because in a big situation, he's proven he's up to it against a right-hand reliever, and there you go. You're all set. Done. Quit trying to reinvent the wheel.
I mean, to me, I don't understand why you'd make yourself weaker at two positions defensively. And here's the other part I don't get. They went out and acquired Kinsler because they felt their defense at second base was a detriment. It was a major problem. They deemed that to be a bigger issue than bullpen help, for crying out loud. They put that above all else, defense at second base. It's a big problem. We're giving away too many outs there. Then you're going to get to the World Series and put right fielder at second base? Like that just doesn't compute to me. I don't think that's consistent. It flies in the face of what they've been telling us all year long.
So do you get the sense that Cora doesn't want to do it? Again, Jimmy, would you mind just queuing up that Cora cut? And I'm going to have you stop it in the middle, but just...
He sounds reluctant.
Yeah, well, just check out his tone. Like, do you think this is a guy that sounds like he's eager to play Mookie Betts at second?
He feels that he's great at second. I don't know. I never saw it. If you ask
well,
him...
Just stop. He says he's great at second. I never saw it.
Exactly.
I mean, isn't he telling you right there?
I mean, so I wonder whether, and look, I don't know if this would be Dombrowski either, but the more they think about it, Dombrowski's the one that made the catch trade.
It's the nerds in the back.
So somebody in the middle
it's
there is...
the analytics department.
Probably. You're probably right.
And also, it's sort of a modern thing. Well, the Dodgers have three or four guys that bounce all over the place, play all sorts. He mentioned it there, Muncy at second. Like, this is a new thing as well, that a lot of position flexibility, horrible cliche, but a lot of guys that played multiple positions. It's a very new agey analytics nerdy thing. So I would not surprise you one bit if the nerds want him at second.
Let me put the question to you this way. If you play Mookie at second base, if you play Mookie at second base and he makes an error that costs you a game, can you live with that?
Well, I mean...
No! No! Of course you can't live with it because you're looking at him and you shouldn't have done it.
Is yes, I'm going to live.
Well, you know what I mean. Yeah, I'm saying, can you accept that? Can you accept that rationally and intellectually? Can you live with that in knowing that you made that decision in the best interest of the team? I can't.
I just think, why are you going to get weaker in two spots? You're now going to get weaker in one with J.D. Martinez in an outfield position. So just cut your losses there and take the balance off of better offense for that one weakness in a defensive spot. Now don't get weaker at two.
Bradley hit 185 against left-handed pitching this year. I was just looking it up. Benintendi at 247. So now, look, I would give some consideration if I were them to putting Benintendi on the bench and playing Martinez in left field. He played left field during the regular season. It was usually at Fenway. Okay, now later in the year, they were giving him more time in right. Maybe that's a comfort thing with him. I don't know. He played right field in Dodger Stadium as a member of the Diamondbacks. So they have options there. I'd be more inclined. If I'm going to pinch hit late in a game, I'd rather pinch it with Benintendi than Bradley anyway. Right? Fair. And in that outfield in Los Angeles, I like the idea of Bradley being in center, at least for the first six innings. It's going to be two at-bats, maybe a third, and if it gets to the sixth and he comes up and you're down, you're going to hit for him anyway. Then at that point, you got to roll the dice. So, I won't quibble over that. One or the other sits. If he sits and you play Benintendi, they're fine. I think you're giving up a little defensively, but Benintendi can play it, or Betts can play it, whatever. Betts at second base? I find that to be like
absurd,
stunning.
Me too,
stunning. The fact that they're even the fact that they're even thinking about it or allegedly thinking about it blows me away.
Let me ask something just on top of all this, and then we'll get to your phones. Is there something going on back there?
I was trying to make sure that I wasn't going to get caught in a producer not listening situation here. So my question is, why would you chance Betts at second base with Machado, known cheap shot artist, and Chase Utley on the Dodgers? They could take out Mookie Betts and change the course of the series due to injury.
The double play is a big one for me, and not just the injury, Jimmy, too. I don't know if he can turn it.
Chase Utley doesn't play. Is he even on the team?
He's on the team.
Is he? I don't remember seeing him once in that NLCS, but either way.
I mean, but the double play is a big one for me, and again, not just the injury factor, because that's going to exist for whoever's out there. But can he turn it? Can he turn a double play under pressure?
All those, there's a million little things. Who's covering second on a throw on a stolen base? Who's, you know, there's like all sorts of little stuff in there. It's not rocket science, but he hasn't done it. So no. The JBJ hippies. He's just going to have to take a seat. He hits 200. Well, just deal with it. It's okay.
Exceptional athlete, two-time gold glover. He'll have no issue there. It's fine. Again, this is all
Mookie, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, Mookie will be fine at second base. Again, the Red Sox are sweeping the series, or they're going to have a gentleman sweep and win it in five games.
Well, you know what? Then why not just put him in short?
No, but Bogart's
over the third.
You could do that. That's
this is their year.
This is all about Murray's take defeated. He's just resigned the fact that no matter...
Wave the white flag.
No matter what they do, what they decide, it's going to work.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They might actually be bullpen proof.
Not even might, Jim. No, they are. They are. They are bullpen proof. It's the upside down world Red Sox now. That's what it is. Up is down, down is up. Jackie Bradley Jr. is turned into Reggie Jackson. David Price wins playoff games now. The Red Sox are winning the World Series.
Okay.
This is their year. What happened to you, Murray?
I've watched it. I just watched what happened last week.
He's take defeated. Do you like the two sets of rules and the NL Park and the AL Park and this sort of back and forth we get into it this time of year?
Yeah, I don't mind it.
I love it.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more interesting.
I love it.
Compared to the old rules where they would alternate every year? You remember that?
Well, no, but I mean meaning who is home field, but you've always had the condition of AL teams having to adjust their lineup in the NL Park and vice versa.
No, way back when, Louis Tiant, I'm going back into the 70s now.
Oh, right, okay.
Louis Tiant batted at Fenway Park.
Yes.
They would alternate the years on that.
Right.
I like it this way. You come to our park, you play our rules.
So you're saying, but when did that end?
Oh, God, I don't know.
A long time
25
ago.
Years ago?
You old man?
Yeah, no, I'm old.
It was longer than 25 years ago, pal.
Maybe 30.
So longer than that.
Maybe.
So you're saying they used to be it was if it was an AL year there'd be a DH in Cincinnati.
Correct.
Is what you're saying.
Yep.
1 year and then the next year the pitchers would hit everywhere. Okay, but that was a long time ago. You old fart.
I am an old fart. Yeah.
Okay, but I like this not just for the talk show fodder because it's good. Betts to second, Martinez to first, Bradley and it's good. That's just good. That's a meat and bones talk radio sort of thing. So I like it for that. But I also think it tests your depth as a team and as a club. You know, how versatile are you? How deep are you? How many different situations can you handle with your personnel? And I think it's a test of how good you are 1 to 25. So I like it for that reason.
Well, and I'll tell you what, if you look at the Red Sox historically, they've done well in the National League parks in this millennium.
And I think that almost in any situation, it's an advantage for the American League team. It is. Because the American League team is more equipped to take one guy off than usually the National League is to put one guy on. Usually when the National League is adding a designated hitter, it's some Punch and Judy nine hitter, some, utility center fielder who has no power, has no bat. That's historically what it's been. The NL doesn't, to typically put in a good bat for that ninth player when they have a designated hitter. What's different this year is that the Dodgers do. The Dodgers do. So in this case, going to L.A. and, dinking with these rules may favor the Dodgers because they could bring, Muncy could be their guy or Kemp could be their guy or, they have power on the bench that doesn't start a lot of times. So they are actually really equipped. This is going to play to their favor when you go out to L.A. throwing out the DH because they actually have guys on the bench who can DH. So we'll pick this up with your thoughts. Red Sox, Patriots, going back and forth all day long to your calls right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the punt with O'Donnell standing on his 30. He has it shoulder high. And
got
the punt
it,
is blocked
got it.
Right up the
Pick
middle.
Up.
Blocked by Hightower.
Score.
It's going to be picked up by the Patriots. Van Noy from the 10 to the 5. Raising his arms to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Dante Hightower, baby. Wow. Came right up the middle. Almost took the entire kicker out, gets the block, then it's about scoring, find the ball, pick it up, scoop score. Van Noy missed it cleanly the first time, but it's a nice job by Ebner and company walling it off. Like I said, you cannot lose to this football team. You can't.
All right, again, big highlight there yesterday from the Patriots win in Chicago. We continue with your thoughts on Red Sox, Dodgers, Patriots, Bears. Andrew in Northbridge waiting patiently to talk about Clayton Kershaw. Go ahead, Andrew.
Two quick points. Why on earth would you want Mookie Betts in the infield with Manny the Boob Machado trying to injure everybody when he runs around?
That was Jimmy Stewart's point.
Yep. And also, Kershaw and Price haven't exactly had the best of postseasons. Kershaw's been a lot better lately. I just want to know your opinion as to who's going to be better for their team this series.
Kershaw. I'm buying in on Kershaw. I just think, again, to lump him with David Price is not fair to Clayton Kershaw. I'll pull up Clayton Kershaw, but I told you, the Dodgers have won 12 of his last 16 playoff starts.
Career postseason, he's 9-8, .408.
Okay, certainly not great, 9-8, .408.
No, but Price is what, 1-9 with an ERA of 6?
Thank you. So to lump them together is just, it's wrong. Price has had one good, well, that's not totally fair. I was going to say he had one good postseason start. He's had a little bit more than that. He's had some bad luck losses in his career. But Kershaw started out really poorly. But recently, he generally pitches well, and they generally win behind him in the postseason. And he's feeling it. He's feeling it. I saw this thing on MLB Network Sunday night. Jimmy, why don't you just cue it up? Do you have the little clip I sent you? Last night, the Dodgers get into Boston. I don't know. Do they fly out of Milwaukee on Saturday night or Sunday morning? Whatever. They got into Boston. And last night, alone, with the lights on, Clayton Kershaw's in the bullpen at Fenway Park last night working on, well, whatever. Here's what it sounded like on the MLB.
This was what he was doing Sunday evening at Fenway Park. This is via ballpark cam. What's he doing here, Dan?
Well, for me, he's going through his mechanics. It's dry work, but it's mental imagery. He's cognitively functioning and trying to get his delivery down to what everything feels right off the mound. Because he knows his delivery leads to his command of all of his pitches. So how cool is this, though?
Yeah.
That he's out here all by himself putting in the work that's going to prepare him in his mind to be the best he can be to come Tuesday night. After everything he's accomplished,
yeah,
this is the little extra work that champions do to be the very best.
Yeah, that's why this guy is one of the best pitchers of all time.
So, I don't know, he's just there by himself. Just gets off the plane and goes over to work on mechanics or his delivery or whatever in an empty stadium. I don't know, was he doing that when he first came in the league? Was he doing that 10 years ago? I don't know. So I respect Clayton Kershaw, and I respect the every dog has his day. I respect that whole thing. And Clayton Kershaw's due, and he's good, and he wants it. And so I just respect that.
I mean, you said a second ago, his last 16 starts are 12-4 in the postseason, and his last 9 outings in the postseason, his ERA is under 3. It's 2.96, and teams are hitting 170 against him.
Thank you.
So, like, you know, I just think people look at this Dodgers team and they think because the Dodgers won, what, 92 games this year, and they've gotten there and lost, that ultimately they're a team that's going to be a pushover. And the Red Sox, as Murray's saying, are going to win in, you know, 5-6 tops, and it's a layup. This is no layup by any stretch. They get a ton of talent on that team. A ton.
We've got Tony in Providence on the lineup situation. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, I got some examples of players that have successfully transitioned to second base. Let me profuse this by saying I've also played at every level other than college and the pros, but you had Bobby Grich go from the outfield to second base. You also had Jesse Barfield do it successfully. Now, you may be too young to remember those guys, but
I know I remember them. But hold on, did they switch throughout their career, or did they just go there for the World Series?
I believe it was just during the World Series, but it does happen.
So hold on, Tony. Thank you for the call.
I don't remember it with Grich in the World Series. Grich did it in his career, and you can argue that
California,
yeah. Yeah, and with Baltimore, too, I think, right? But I think that you can argue that overall second base is an offensive position.
It's
you
an easy position. That. It is an easy position.
But I'm telling you, you're just going to draw. Now, look, I know that Mookie played it in the minors. I get all of that. In the World Series, you're going to do it in a 108-win season when you have 115 now and counting?
To keep Jackie Bradley, is 200 batting average in there? I don't get it.
I just think all it's going to take is one botched double play to screw you. I'm not even talking about the injury. I'm talking about just one botched double play. One. And it could cost you the World Series. To me, I don't do it. If they do it, I'll be surprised. Again, and I go back to the Kinsler thing. At the deadline, they deemed defense at second base to be such a problem that they went out and traded for Ian Kinsler over bullpen help. Now they're going to get to the World Series and they're going to sit Kinsler and play Mookie Betts there? Does that make any sense?
I keep saying 200 batting average. If I just gave you Jackie Bradley's postseason batting average this year, it's under 200. I can't do the math quickly enough, or I can't find the column on Baseball Reference. He hit 167 against the Yankees and 200 against the Astros. So, I don't know. He's 5 for 27, Maz. Whatever that is.
Okay, that's 175-ish, 180.
You why... Like, you've got to keep that guy in the lineup. It's so absurd. The overthinking of this, all because the Bradley hippies, the JBJ hippies, I'm stealing an Adam Jones sort of phrase, but it is. It's the Moonies. It's like this cult of Jackie Bradley Jr., this following of Jackie Bradley Jr., because the Dipsy do play in the outfield every now and then. And then, obviously, he had big hits in the last series. I'm not taking that away. But he's hitting 170-something this postseason. That's the guy that goes to the bench and stop jumping through hoops. Could try to reinvent the wheel. We've got Nicole in New Hampshire for Maz on Sony Michelle. Go ahead, Nicole.
Hey, so Tony already answered my question, so I'm going to move on to a couple of other things. Jimmy Murray, I loved you from the Sandlot. You've been my favorite. And every time that I call in, I'm going to say that. But my biggest thing right now is, has there ever been previous Red Sox players that are now managers going into the World Series? Because I tried looking it up, and you guys seem to have the insight on this. I can't find it anywhere.
So what you're saying, Nicole, is that there's two former Red Sox players managing here. Has that ever happened before, even one?
Exactly what I'm saying. And I can't find that anywhere, and I'm wondering if
okay.
that's the case.
Well, let's think, Maz, just off the top of your head.
I mean, not that I can think of.
Any.
Although, you know
Red
what,
Sox
now that
player.
I think of it, I think Dick Williams played for the Red Sox. So I think he did. I was just trying to look it up real fast.
And Dick Williams managed the Sox in 67.
Correct.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did Ned Yost ever come through here?
I don't think so. I don't know.
So I can't even think of another. Okay. You know what? We'll look it up. Murray, what's the Sandlot?
It was the Sandbox. It was the morning show on WFNX.
Oh.
It's been gone for like, you know, years now.
Well, so there you
but
go.
Thanks.
There's a Big Jim Murray hippie.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Just
yeah.
like there's JBJ hippie. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Thank
there's
you,
a Mooney.
Man.
There's a Big Jim Murray Mooney out there. Speaking of Big Jim Murray, the latest on Sony Michel's injury right here in the update, and then we're right back as we continue to go through Patriots and Red Sox. A lot of stuff on either side. One of the things we hated the most about yesterday's game. We'll get to that right after this.
Felger and Maz. At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Parkey to kick it off right to left. He angles it to the near side, bouncing from the three into the hands of Patterson, who runs to the 15-20. Patterson is hit at the 23, and the ball's out.
Oh, my God.
Loose at the 24 of New England and recovered by Carson of Chicago.
Terrible. Carrying it like a breadbasket, not protecting the football. Pops right to him. Basically runs right into the back of one of his players. Kind of scattered from the get-go. Ball's kicked short, bounces on the five. Little indecision. He grabs it, takes off, and then he's just upright. Runs right into the back of one of his players. I mean, pick your head up. Look where you're looking. Uncalled for right there.
Cordell Patterson. How do we feel about this player? Murray, I'll start with you. How do you feel about this player?
I am not a fan. And just for yesterday, he has an even Steven day. He has that horrific fumble, which is caused by running into the ass of his own player. It's not like the ball was punched out. A horrific turnover at that time that changes the momentum of the game. It feels like a complete disaster. And what, I'm supposed to feel great about him because he has a 95-yard touchdown return? When he's high-fiving his own player and won't get in the effing end zone? I can't stand this gimmicky player. Nice. Good return, man. The best in the league. Neat. How many teams are actually going to kick to him?
I mean, just the dumb ones like Chicago.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It didn't stop the Bears. Morons. Really. Like, again, as soon as the ball popped out, I went, here we go.
This is this guy's career, though. Fumble, dumb mistake. Try to use him as a gimmicky player in the offense. Wow, what a return. Rinse, repeat. Same thing over and over, no matter where he is. Oakland, Minnesota, here.
And that one looked bad, too, right? Like, some fumbles look worse than others. That one looked bad.
Oh, my
God.
Like,
when the ball comes jumping out like that.
From just running into the back of your teammate?
It's like, you jackass, hold on to the ball. Like, would you shoot that one out of a slingshot and fumble that one? Holy crap. As soon as that thing popped into the air, I was like, good God, here we go. Numbnuts Patriots at it again. You know, they're down 17-7 in that game, and I'm going, you got to be kidding me. Now, in his defense, I thought that kick return for the touchdown was the biggest play of the game. Because I feared that it was starting to get away there. And all of a sudden, 17-14, it all got washed away.
So, I mean, fair enough. But I don't consider that atoning or making up for the fumble.
No, it isn't.
You have the right to expect him to return the kick, but not fumble the other one. That's correct. The idea. The idea is to not fumble, but to get the kickoff return every once in a while. That's why you're being paid $3.25 million, which is way too much for what you bring to the table. Way too much. But it is not unreasonable. In fact, it is the baseline expectation that you hold on to the ball and every once in a while break one. That's why you're here. If you put the ball on the ground, then the kickoff return doesn't really count because all it does is bring us back to even. So no, that's not atoning for or making up for or anything like that. I'm surprised so many people feel that way. Good God, you want your quarterback to throw an interception for every touchdown and say, well, he made up for the interception with a touchdown. Not 25 touchdowns and 25 interceptions? Is that how that works?
No, the fumble can't happen. Absolutely cannot happen. It's not a net zero. That still comes out as a negative. You're giving the other, you know, because you're not going to have that many returns. Like, I just, to me, that was, again, I thought the return was the biggest play of the game. Because it felt to me like, oh boy, here we go. And it just tightened it up right away.
So then he gets it, though, and then he does that jackass routine at the end there with the high-fiving Jackson and then the tiptoeing into the end zone. Like, what, you clown? You just fumbled. What are you doing? And you're down 10 points.
And I didn't love his answer after the game either. And I think it was in the Volan column where he said, hey, football, you know, bleep happens.
Can I give it to you?
Yeah, go ahead.
So here are all of his quotes. He was asked if it was a redemption for the fumble, Maz. He said, not redemption, man. I'm a playmaker. I mean, right there, it's like, shut up. You suck. You actually kind of suck. I mean, really, for being honest, I know. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. I know I've done this with Van Noy before, and it turns out he doesn't suck. But I think Patterson kind of sucks. I think he does.
I never say that about anybody.
I think he kind of sucks.
He's a gimmicky player.
He could return kicks. So anyway, it's not redemption, man. I'm a playmaker, man. I hold myself accountable as the best kickoff returner in the league, and that's what I stand for. So every time I'm out there, I've got to be aggressive and approach it like it's my last. Every time I do something bad, it's going to sit in my head. But the next play, you've got to keep going. On his premature celebration, he said, quote, it's not premature, man. I have fun with my job. When I stop having fun with it, I'm going to be done with it. That's what I do. I'm going to have fun every time I get the chance.
Cross the end zone line, score the touchdown, then have your fun. This may, if you weren't MFing your television when he was high-fiving, whoever was it, J.C. Jackson, whoever that was,
yeah.
Then I don't want to know you. Because the play, and here's how you know. Here's how you know, and Beadle and Zoe talked about it, so we talked about the post game too. Here's how you know the Cordarrelle Patterson was wrong to it. It made Bob Soucy mad.
Right. Oh, my God, that's
kind
right.
Kind Bob Soucy, the nicest man I've maybe ever met. It made Soucy mad. That's not the Patriot way. You're darn right it's not. Get in the end zone.
You hear the call coming up. He does. You know, he says that's not the Patriot way.
I'll tell you what. I've seen some guys, like, showboated at the 2-yard line, at the 1, at the 10. At the 10-yard line, he's high-fiving. I was like, you've got Bill. Bill must be pissed at that. Well, he's got to be pissed.
His guy, he's the one who sunk the money into him, and he's the one that believes him, so he's going to defend him probably. But then his last quote, again, on the fumble, it's football, bleep happens, Patterson said.
Oh, no. I'm sure Bill will love to hear that explanation when they look over the film. Cordarrelle, how do you explain this fumble? Hey, man, this stuff happens. Oh. That's good.
What happened to the line Belichick supposedly told this player before he signed him? We're going to turn you into the player we think that you can be, or something along those lines.
No, yes, they did.
He's the same guy.
Same guy he's always been.
The same guy he's been in Oakland and in Minnesota.
And you
he's
know
a numbnut.
Look, he has certain value, I think, but to me it's, you know, at a minimum salary. It's not a, you know, multi-million dollar guy or first-round pick guy is where he was taken. He's a, you know, good special teamer and has a limited role in the offense, but can, you know, add an element. But to me, it should be a very low cost. 3.25 is too much. I can't remember what they gave up to get him. So I don't think he's worth what he's being paid, but he's not a zero. It's just, I just hate that kind of player. He's fast and nothing else. Whee! Okay. Right. But is he smart or tough or heady or instinctive or, you know, can you do any of the little things? No, and no. He can just run through the building. Which is like, okay, neat.
And how about the Bears again, kicking it to them at the end of the game? Like, they just got within 7. All they have to do is kick it through the end zone. Don't let the clock run at all. Save the seconds, save the yardage, save all of it. My only possible explanation is they thought he would spit the ball up again. So they said, you know what? Kick it to him, he'll fumble. Like, that's my only possible answer. Like, you know, if we hit this guy, he'll fumble. We'll get the ball back. That's my, otherwise, what are you doing? Absolutely, kick it through the end zone. Don't let the clock run, you morons. What are you doing?
But this whole thing about the return atoning for the fumble, like, that's okay. So for every touchdown one of your players scores, you're okay with him putting it on the ground? That makes no sense. It was a bad day for him. That's a net negative. It's not a net even. No. You know, the idea is for him to get a big return every once in a while and not give up seven by fumbling the ball, by running to the back of something named, what was that guy's name?
Grigsby.
Bingo Goobleman? What's his name?
Nicholas Grigsby.
Nicholas Grigsby.
By not running up Grigsby's back and putting the ball on the ground. That's not atoning for anything.
He literally almost ran right up and in Grigsby's butt.
Holy Lord.
Like the butt fumble part two, crying out loud.
Anywhere, that's your Cordell Patterson thought. Back to your phones on this and the Red Sox right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Kickoff by Parkey, left to right, to the 5-yard line, handled by Patterson, left side, to the 10, to the 15, right to the 20, 25, 30,
okay.
Avoids a hit,
see
and he runs right to the 40,
bye-bye,
trying to outrun the kicker to the 45, 40, he will, he's in the clear, goodbye, Cordell Patterson, loose to the 10, a high five at the 5, and trotting into the end zone, touchdown, Patriots!
Boy, that'll make up for fumbling earlier. Get your butt in the end zone. Too much showboating down there. He's still losing his football game.
Yeah.
But, man, when he's right and he hits a crease, you're not going to get him. And he just sidesteps one guy and just outruns the kicker. What a run.
95 yards in all. A high five at the 5-yard line from J.C. Jackson. I'm not sure Bill Belichick is going to like the way that play ended.
Yeah.
And the Patriots with a much-needed boost by Patterson after his gaffe earlier.
It'd be class here in that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice having a kick returner, though.
Low snap from Cardona to Allen. Plays down, kicked by Gostkowski. They're born to the uprights. And it's good. And as cliched as it sounds, I was about to say it. I interrupted myself. I'll say it anyway. It's not the Patriot way of doing things on the field.
No.
Now, Sosie sure took Patterson over his knee, didn't he?
Spanked by...
He's like a sassy mom there. Mm-hmm.
We've been there, Cordell. Every Friday at 3:20, Bob comes in and gives us a spanking.
Such
a
smoking bomb.
Patriots moralist, Bob Sosie.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Patriot way.
I haven't heard him that mad since Brandon Cooks dropped that pass against Jacksonville. Through his hands!
Yeah. All right, so anyway, there's your Patterson stuff. Here's Mike and Sterling following up on that. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much. What do you got?
Not only is Patterson a less than average receiver, but he's also an a-hole. If he did what he did back in 2003, 2004 with Willie McGinnis being around, Willie would have punched him right in the mouth in the locker room after the game. I can't even believe after being down 17-14 that he thought it was a good idea to stop at the 20 and start walking into the end zone. I haven't seen anything like that from a Patriots player in 15, 20 years.
Mike, I'm with you. He just doesn't feel like their kind of guy. On so many levels, he's not like an instinctive player. He's not a gutty player. He's not an intangible player. He's just a speed demon.
Sprinter.
He's just a sprinter who makes too much money. Like, since when? I know, like, 3.25, and it's not like he makes 30 a year, but trust me, man, just...
No, he's like an Al Davis-era Raider. That's where he should have stayed.
And like it feels like... And off the field, too, it's he clowning into the end zone like that, and then afterwards saying, it's not premature, man. I have fun with my job. If I stop having fun with it, I'm going to be done with it. It's what I do. I'm going to have fun every time I get the chance. When he's asked about, you know, does the kickoff atone for the fumble, or does it redeem yourself from the fumble? Not redemption, man. I'm a playmaker, man. Okay, Cordero.
That includes bad plays.
All right. You know, I've also heard he doesn't ride on the player's bus a lot of times to and from the games.
Right, I heard this too.
He rides, there's like a third bus, which has like the media, like it has like Perillo, like the scrubs. and I'm just guessing Perillo. I mean, I don't know. The third bus has like media, sub-trainers, marketing people, like, you know, the Gonzo
bus. Yeah, the Perillo bus.
Yeah, the I'm not going to say it's the same size as all the other buses. I mean, I'm not saying that. But
the one with the Dunkin' Munchkins on it.
It's the one where they're chugging donuts in the back. Yeah. So he doesn't go on the bus with the players. He goes on the bus with like support staff and media, and sort of weird. Like, I guess the thing is, like, he doesn't be around football players. He doesn't always like being around.
Because he's not much of one.
He doesn't
make sense.
He doesn't like being around football players.
I just don't think he's that good.
Okay.
That's all.
We've got this. We've got Sox Dodgers. John and Alston on the Sox roster. Go ahead, John.
Oh, yeah, guys. Quick, Tony, on Mookie Betts playing second. If there's going to be a Bosch double play, I think it's going to be because of Devers, not because of Mookie Betts playing second base. And the and also, if he plays second, it's only going to be one of the games in L.A. because they're going to throw two lefties games 4 and 5. So they're going to just hit Bradley for that. It'll be Rich Hill and Clayton Kershaw. And then
right.
The final thought is on Brandon Phillips. Why isn't he on the roster over Blake Swihart when you can put him in at third base and he'll probably give you better defense than Devers or Nunez late in the game?
So, look, you know, to me, Phillips was in play, especially after that home run in that game in Atlanta. I thought, okay, maybe this guy's got a shot. But in retrospect, he never had a chance. And when I say they never seriously considered him is what I mean to say. They like the idea of the third catcher with Swihart. They can move him around. I can't say I blame him. I like that third catcher thing, too. It gives you a little bit more flexibility late in games.
Okay, in terms of the Dodgers' rotation, have they declared it? Isn't it Ryu in game 2, Buehler 3, Hill 5?
They were expecting it today. I have not heard definitively yet that it was going to be Ryu in game 2, but that seemed to be where it was going. Is that they were expecting game 2, Ryu.
Okay. I just think, again, Betts at second. I can't believe there's as many people, I'd say legitimate, you know, including Shaughnessy as legitimate, but, you know, is the team really considering it? They play him at second. He took grounders at second the other day.
So, like, even the caller saying it the way he did, right? And I'm not jumping down his throat. I'm just saying, well, if they're going to botch a double play, it'll be more likely to be Devers than Betts. Really? How do you know? None of us have seen the guy turn a double play.
Devers ain't turning anything. It's just the throw from third. What are you talking about?
Like, so I just look at that whole thing, and I can't believe people are so cavalier about the idea of seeing Mookie Betts and say, oh, yeah, just plug him in. He'll turn a double play. No problem. Really? With a guy bearing down on him in a World Series game when he hasn't been out there in how long? That's asking a lot. I honestly, I'm surprised they haven't shot it down. Like, now, I'm not sure they're going to do it. But the fact that they haven't shot it down, maybe they're dinking around with the Dodgers. I have no idea. But the fact that they haven't shot it down, I find stunning.
To me, the most stunning thing is the people that need Jackie Bradley in there. And it shouldn't, because he's such a fervent, you know, weird cult following. So it shouldn't surprise me, but the fella's hitting 170-something this postseason, and he's got to play? Joe and Peabody on Cordell Patterson. Yes, Joe?
What's up, Mike? I love that you're having fun with the old Cordell Patterson. It's like, if he can be consistently and just do something, stop tripping over himself and be consistently doing that, that'd be cool. But the Red Sox, Murray, I love you, buddy, but will you calm down? It's the World Series, and dude, just calm down.
I'm not calming down because I've seen what this team has done here for a month. They're a buzzsaw. They're winning the World Series in 5 games tops. I don't know how anyone else can admit that at this point. Just wave the white flag. If you were a doubter, you mocked 108 wins. You mocked David Price. We're all taking L's here, everybody. The Red Sox, they're already the World Series champions. It's all moot between now and November 1st.
May I go?
Go ahead.
I say something?
Yeah.
I'm not dumping on the Sox anyway. I don't think the Sox are going to lose because of their holes or their deficiencies. I mean, they might, but that's not my point. My point is I think people are overlooking the Dodgers pitching staff. That's all. I think pitching still matters. I mean, maybe it matters less, or starting pitching matters less than it ever has with the way baseball is played now and all the newfangled stuff that's going on. Like, I get all that. But at the end of the day, Clayton Kershaw is an all-time legit ace who it now wins in the postseason. And he's knocking at the door, and he wants this one. And that Buehler kid, if you saw him on Saturday night, that kid throws bullets. He's good. And Ryu, he got hit in game 6 of this NLCS, but look at his numbers. He's good. And Rich Hill, you think you can tater, but just wait. This guy is the definition of the crafty lefty. He'll drive you crazy. Has no velocity. He'll strike you out. He'll make a 90-mile-an-hour fastball look. He's one of these guys.
Closer's nasty.
That backs you up, and then a 90-mile-an-hour fastball somehow gets by your bat. And Rich Hill's been good. Their closer, nasty. Their bullpen, I think, was the number one bullpen ERA in the National League this year. They went to the World Series last year and lost in 7. And now they're back. And that's a dangerous team. So I'm not sitting here telling you that the Dodgers could win this because of the wheel of gutless bums or Price is going to choke or all these things we've been hitting on all year.
That wheel doesn't exist anymore.
I'm telling you that the Dodgers pitching staff, if they're on, can shut you down. They can shut you down.
Yeah, and I thought the same thing about the Astros pitching staff, including their bullpen, which I thought was, you know, markedly better than the Red Sox. All moot. Moot. Doesn't matter. They're getting production from the bottom of the lineup and guys like Jackie Bradley Jr. Nope.
Dodgers bullpen so far is a 1.3 ERA in the postseason. 1.3.
Not talking myself into being scared of the Dodgers. I'm not doing it.
No, you do it. Go ahead. Be stupid.
I mean, I'm not going to change my prediction either. I still have the Sox. But I told you that if the Dodgers come out of that National League side, I could pretty easily talk myself into them giving you a real good series. And I didn't take long. I'm there. If they pitch, they can shut you down. And this is a series. They have better pitching than you. I mean, I don't know why. And I mean, can you even debate that? I mean, 617-779-0985. You tell me. Can you make a case that the Red Sox have better pitching front to back than the Dodgers?
No, I don't think so, no.
So,
especially with Sale in an unknown state, no.
You go into a series and you say, well, the other team has better pitching. I mean, how can you not take that seriously? But then again, Murray had a good one. Houston had better pitching on paper, too. I suppose that's true.
And right now, with the way that he's pitched, I would take Nathan Eovaldi over anybody. I know what Clayton Kershaw has done, and I know his history. But Nathan Eovaldi right now has been the best starter in the playoffs here for the last couple of weeks.
According to scouts, he doesn't match up well with the Dodgers. I'll give you some of that coming up next. And more of your thoughts. Red Sox, Dodgers, Patriots, Bears. We continue on a reentry Monday right after Murray's update here. No commercials.
Felger and Mazz. The Sports Hub.